Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about the Merge episode. Episode 9, a crazy episode. To me, a hilarious episode. I cannot wait to get into it. And to join me, we have an outstanding panel once again. As always, my amazing co-host and what I'm calling the Nicole to my many food items. That is a duo this week. Please welcome Mike Blue.
When you said Nicole, I was very worried at first, considering some of the interesting conversations he had. But I'm so happy to be here, not only to talk with you, Shannon, but our great guest. He is absolutely... Wait, did I say he?
Nicole, right? I mean, the way Darrell was so bad in that moment, and the way that Meryl took it was also not great. I know Tribal Council can be confusing, but that whole moment was amazing. And we'll talk about it with our guest. It is a he, and also the breakout character of the latest US Survivor season, and it's his first Survivor recap ever, so please give a warm welcome to Rick Devins. Rick, thank you so much for joining us on the Survivor South Africa podcast.
I am so excited to be here. I can't even express myself, and I'm ready to talk Survivor South Africa with my fist today. like my boy Dante.
Okay, well, we absolutely love having you here, and well, I guess the first question I have for you is, why are you doing here this season? Yeah, like, you haven't watched international as far as I know before this. You're into it now. You're tweeting out your thoughts every week. The Survivor South Africa Twitter account, which has not a lot of love for me and Mike, to be honest, loves you. So what are you doing watching this season?
All right. So I had, as you said, never watched a international Survivor in my life. I was totally ignorant to it. All I'd known is that Russell Hance did not do well on an international Survivor. And then I'm at the Survivor finale after party, and this huge, very cool looking guy comes up to me wearing a backpack. And I'm like, okay. And he starts talking to me, and he has a South African accent, and he says, he's Leroux Botha, and he's the executive producer of Survivor South Africa. And I'm like, oh, that's amazing. I love Survivor. I'm a big Survivor fan.
Leroux's amazing. He's given so much to the Survivor community, and now he's given Rick Devins as a fan of Survivor South Africa.
He is the man. I'm emailing him like every week, like, Leroux, I can't believe that you guys just did this. I love it. So I'm so excited that he got me into this. And now I can't wait to watch other seasons. I just feel like I have to wait till this one's over so I don't get confused.
Well, you have to watch last season. I know every time you tweet about it, everyone is talking to you about how, like, you absolutely have to watch last season, one of my favorite seasons ever. And everyone, like, you know what?
No spoilers, though.
No. What I would allude to is, in very euphemistic terms, I'd say take the energy, Rick, from that Julia Tribal Council where everyone was up and about and just like chaos was ensuing. Stretch that over the course of 13 or 16 episodes, and that's Survivor South Africa Philippines.
Oh my gosh! Wow, that's a pitch. That's a pitch. You want to know how stupid I am? there were two options: Survival Island of Secrets and Survivor Philippines. So I was like, okay, I'm going to start watching Island of Secrets because, you know, I don't speak Filipino. I was like, and I never even got curious about it. And then one day I was like, I'm such an idiot. Why have I not even looked at what Survivor Philippines is like? Like, I want to see what the host is. I want to see all these like people, Filipino people playing. And I clicked on it. And of course, within 2 seconds, realized what an idiot I am.
So you would assume that while I'm glad you were able to speak Island of Secrets, at least you'd be able to, you know, work along with this season. No translation needed.
No. I'm a big District 9 and Chappie fan. Not to mention a lot of the crew guys on my season of American Survivor were from South Africa, including the Rickster. Shout out to the Rickster who works on the Survivor crew.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of South Africans on the crew as well. That's actually how I got a hat signed by Jeff Probst, but that's another story. But yeah, I mean, Leroux, I love that he got you into the season. What are you really loving about the season so far? Because we see your tweets, but they're digging into it. What are you loving about the season? And which characters are you loving?
I am loving, first of all, I feel like every character is great. I feel like everyone is playing hard in their own way, which is awesome. That's the trademark of the season. I love how they have more time so that you get to see more of everybody. Like, I'm very jealous of that. Of course, I said I love the things learning about South Africa. Steers, biostrath. I don't know what probiflora is.
No one does.
But those things are amazing. I love Sumpay and Leticia both made it past the danger zone to the merge. Like, that's awesome. You see that so rarely in American Survivor that older players, especially older women, do well. And I think they're set up to do really well. Jacques has been a lot of fun to watch. I read it as Corbis, but apparently it's Quibus.
Don't worry. This is going to be a struggle throughout. We went with like Quibus, sort of. That's the way I've been trying to pronounce it. I know that, like, as Americans, Rick, you and I are both in the same boat of just butchering the unfortunate pronunciations of these beautiful names.
Hey, I'm South African, and I think I butchered a couple. So.
I'm going with Quibus. But I think he's amazing. He is awesome. Like, he's such a challenge beast. I love it. But yeah, I love so many of these different. Mikey's great. Jeff is awesome. Duro cracks me up all the time. Every time he's on TV. I'm deep into this, guys.
Yeah, underratedly good cast. I really do think, like, where is the dud? Show me the dud still in the game. And even like thinking of how many great characters we lost pre-merge, you know, Tanya, Ting Ting, Nathan, obviously. And we
Tanya was a gift. She was amazing. No, I've never seen another international season, but I looked at this and was like, oh my gosh, this is an amazing cast. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, the last season as well. So if I was South Africa, it's either just like South Africans are super entertaining or they're like really good at casting because like barely any duds across the board. So congratulations to them there. But this episode, I thought it showed how great this cast was because there was so much going on, strategic stuff going on. To me, it was just a hilarious episode, like so many parts of it. I love Nicole's apology tour, which took 2 days for some reason, mostly 2 days of just like heavy sighing, which was great. I love Steffi's decision we'll talk about was hilarious. Dante's terrible math makes me crack up every time I think about it. We're going to talk about all these things, but I love that it was just such a fun episode, which Survivor South Africa so often is.
And it's so interesting to me because this was such like a cause and effect episode where, like you said, Shannon, I'd say a good portion of the strategy was dedicated to Nicole essentially trying to clean up the giant mess she made during last Tribal Council. And Rick, I know that I would say, you know, a bit of a sticking point with your season, not your fault at all, was that it was a little tough sometimes episode to episode to discern, you know, long-term storytelling of how do the actions of the previous 3 days affect the next 3 days. And I feel like this is a key example of really seeing that play out where, I mean, Nathan was essentially the 14th player here, right? His presence really hung over everything, whether it was, you know, Rob getting revenge.
Oh my God.
Nicole wearing the hat, you know.
I wanted Nate gone because of the hat. I just wanted that stupid hat out of the game.
Well, it's not. It lives forever.
And the fact that it's still around hurts me. Burn the hat.
Listen, only people who American survivors who do poorly in international seasons can get their hats burned. So I think that unfortunately Nathan's is preserved right now. But yeah, it seems like, you know, Rob has.
They burn Russell's hat?
They did. This is what we like as Australians.
Yeah, Australia, they just bring it to the reunion and put it in a corner and laugh at it. But it does seem like, you know, Rob, I think, is on a little bit of a revenge tour that I'm sure we're going to be talking about. It seems like, unfortunately, as much as we lauded Jeff making the move against Nathan last episode, again, maybe for different reasons than he should have, it seems like it really pushed him out in front on all sides. So, I mean, this was a seismic vote, probably the biggest vote of the season last time in terms of, you know, cause and effect. And it seems like even though we did get rid of Meryl this time, the effects are still going to be resounding throughout the rest of the post-merge.
Yeah, I mean, I stand by the fact that I still think it was the right move for Jeff, because I feel like just going into the merge with that Amigos five sim was not a great look. And I think they're just going to take him out at 7 or 8. You know, this is riskier. And it's definitely something we talked about as well with Edge of Extinction. Like, when is the right time? I feel like he needed to do it before the merge. Maybe he'll go sooner than he would have. But I think he also has a better chance to win than he would have. So I still stand by the move. But this vote here, to me, was so interesting because, Mike, we spoke about a few weeks ago, we thought it was going to be a war. And then we talked how it was going to be the wheel. And then we said it was going to be frantic voting blocks last week. But for me, this week, it kind of felt like a really, really long Last Supper steers table, you know, and everyone's standing there and everyone has a connection. And it's so obvious to me, like on one side, you have Jeff and Marva, who are right on the one side. Then you obviously have Mike and Doral, who have more connections. Then kind of like the Saula people in the middle with CP and Rob kind of running things. Then you've got Jacques next to them. And then Corbis, Letitia, and Marilyn Dante right on the side. And it's just this like perfect gradient table of all of the colors. And I think we really saw that today in the fact that Jeff on one side got 6 votes, some of them not on purpose, but we'll see. And then some of, you know, Meryl on the other side went home. So is that what you were kind of seeing in the dynamics of this episode?
I think that, you know, I think Boston Rob said a while back, you know, you can tell what people's places are in the game in terms of relationship by where they choose to sleep in the shelter. And I feel like we saw a microcosm of that in the giant steers table, even though Doral, I think, tried to complete the circle with him dutifully waving at Dante from across the table when his face was essentially covered in all 72 types of sauces that Steers offers. But
can we take a quick time out to talk about how much Doral eating cracks me up all the time? God.
I mean, like, Rick, listen, you're preaching to the choir here. I've been a long time Doral supporter, and I told Shannon offline, this is probably the most Doral we've seen Doral, considering that only Doral would down, I'd assume, several ridiculously thick milkshakes before realizing that he's lactose intolerant.
Yeah, every time there's food in front of Doral, I'm paying extra attention because it cracks me up.
And I think that...
Yeah, Doral's amazing.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, Jacques essentially is nailing the point you made, Shannon, by saying, hey, I purposely chose to sit near my former Ta'alo people because I had sort of outlined last week how, oh, are they going to be mad at Jacques? Because remember how Jacques royally biffed it when it came to playing the idol for himself instead of Ting Ting, and, you know, his plan blew up in his face, but... I guess, like, you know, desperate times make strange bedfellows of us all, and it seems like Meryl and Dante were more than eager to accept Jacques back in their lives, especially because none of them wanted to go swimming, so they all just sort of hung out on land and discussed what they needed to do. So I think that what you're saying is very accurate, but I think it's poignant because I'm assuming that the spots that people chose was representative of the fact that I'm going to sit next to the people that I want to sit next to. And as a result, you really do get a blend. I am very intrigued that, you know, I don't think this is going to be the long term for right now. But, and Rick, I'm sure you can speak to this as, you know, entering a huge merge with a bunch of different, you know, factions coming together. You just want a name. You know, it's almost like the first vote of the season where you just want somebody to throw out a name. And as long as it's not you, you're OK. So to see this supermajority form between, you know, the former Saula people along with Mike's group plus Doral ends up coming together with Jacques and, you know, Kuba sort of playing spy and throwing their votes against Jeff. It seems like, you know, for now, oh, Dante's definitely next up, but it seems like there's certainly some fractures in there that really could come to the surface very soon.
Yes, because while it was a 6-7 vote, which had Jeff sweating absolute bullets, even I, who knew that, you know, from the edit that Jeff was meant to be getting 6 votes, was kind of stressing out for him because it's like, that's a very delicate situation. Just one person needs to get it wrong and he is going home. But while it was 6 votes for Jeff, we did see, as you said, that Jacques was going to vote twice for Jeff. Kubis was, even in a secret scene, I feel like maybe even Letitia was in the know. So while it was 6-7, it kind of was like a 10-2, as far as I'm aware. Because, yeah, and it makes a lot of sense for me because Saula, I thought, were kind of in the middle, that swing vote really between Ta'alo and Lao Mei and these like really broad OG groups that were kind of, you know, obviously mixed up with the swap, but that is kind of how it played out. And they have connections to Lao Mei that they just really don't have with Meryl and Dante, you know, whether it's Rob and Mike or Nicole has her connection, Sipe and Doral. So it just kind of makes sense in these big groups to just take out someone like a Meryl who everyone is against and then kind of, you know, maybe take Dante out next and then see how you're going at like an 11 to really get a war going with more manageable numbers.
It'll be interesting because it is so obvious that Dante's next that I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see Dante slip through, especially when what looks like his biggest weakness right now, which is his temper, is going to turn out to be the greatest thing that ever happened to him because people will be like, oh, man, he's this huge challenge threat, but nobody likes him. He can't control himself. He's not someone that anyone's going to work with. Maybe we should get rid of Quibus You know, maybe we should take a closer look at, you know, Jock or Rob. And I think that if Dante slips through, it's going to be the same reason he wasn't targeted this vote, which is he lost his temper. And it seems like such a horrible move gameplay wise. But think about if he was a great guy to have around camp. Would you have gotten rid of him or Merrill?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's very much, you know, mimicking of the Joey Amazing vote almost in that, like, this is someone who's just not only good at challenges, but just like very good in general. And actually, speaking of Dante, Rick, I would love to ask you, because you, safe to say, you certainly had your emotional moments on your season. I think back to, you know, your conversation with War Dog, where you said, oh, yeah, I'd love to work with you. Not just kidding. You know, screw you. And we saw Dante.
Screw you with my fist.
Yeah. And you know, we see Dante.
Exactly.
And Dante in the beginning of this episode just like blows up on Nicole. It seemed like he was really pushed with limits.
Oh my gosh.
And you know, Nicole kept going back to that hammock and I think unintentionally poking the bear. I think she was really just trying to apologize, but Dante just
wearing that stupid hat.
I think it was the hat really that really pushed him over the edge. But I guess I want to ask you, how tough is it to really manage your emotions, specifically the anger side of your emotions in a game which is increasingly become, you know, social and dependent upon the way that you treat people? How tough is it to really keep that reined in?
I mean, it can be tough. I definitely had my issues. And I got, if I was laying in that hammock and I'd been blindsided like Dante and Merrill, and, you know, all I want to know is what happened, right? I mean, obviously it happened to you, but it'd be nice to know what happened. So Nicole comes up to you and says, hey, you know, let's just talk about it in the morning. It's like, okay, like I can deal with that. Then she gives her side of the story, then says, let's talk about it in the morning.
Mm.
Then you say, but, and she says, are you at home tonight? Are you? I mean, so condescending. I think I definitely would have lost my temper. I think, yeah. I definitely would have said, just leave me alone. What are you doing to me? And I love the fact that she stabs her best friend in the back, goes and then does this whole thing and then calls them villains. It's like, come on. I'm not a Nicole fan. Why was she so annoying during the challenge? What does she have to gain by that?
Yeah, I tweeted that Nicole had, you know, she said she wants to get the good guys to the end, unironically, while wearing Nathan's hat was just incredible television to me.
Oh, my God.
I have to disagree with you on Nicole, because I think she is such an amazing character. I'm like, through this episode, I could not stop laughing at every single thing that Nicole did. Like, she's such good entertainment. She's so dramatic. She's such a complex character. She's so different to what I thought she would be at the beginning of the season, when I was like, she's a winner who wins at everything. Now I think she's tracking that she might be a goat. She might get zero votes. Like, I genuinely think that if Letitia wants to sit next to someone and win, Nicole might be a good bet for her. Because, as you said, the food stuff was hilarious and annoyed every single person. I love that Marba kind of, like, entertained it at first. Like, yeah, I want waffles. And then 2 hours later, probably like, why did I do this? And just the apology tour that, you know, it took 2 days. And I just love every single thing she was doing was so bad, but so entertaining to me. It was like the heavy sighing, the platitudes of like, I'll tell you later. It's complicated. The things
I agree 100%.
No idea.
The TV is amazing. And I love that Supe in the middle of the merge feast. What happened with Nate, like from across the table?
Well, that's the thing about CPay, though, that I've realized is that CPay just loves conversations in the open. She's essentially, her attitude towards Survivor is like, do you have something to share with the rest of the class? It really seems like she's like, let's have open conversations about why we need to get rid of strong people. Why Tanya should go tonight. Nicole, why don't you tell everyone here what happened with Nathan? Nicole has such an interesting view of the game as well, because while she does do these actions of betrayal, she still has this sort of sense of morality. She says later on about Merrill and Dante, you know, they're only here for the game. They're not here for humanity. Who signs up for Survivor for humanity?
Well, Mike, that was my main reason for going on Survivor. It was Humanity One.
Well, you won the Seer Award, right? So that's what the Humanity Award means.
Exactly. Thank you, Shannon. Exactly. No, it's amazing. Nicole's, maybe that's the Miss South Africa in her.
Yeah, it very much is like the world peace side of her. But then at the
I'm
same
doing
time,
it for humanity.
Yeah, and I love the apology tour, though. I agree, Shannon, because now she's trying to, I think she's trying to spin this narrative of, well, Nathan really wanted to go. Like, I think she's spinning it like Nathan's old Yeller. And she's like, Rob, I had to take him behind the shed. Like, he was going to quit if we didn't take him out then. When, like, if Rob asked literally anybody else on that tribe, and granted, Rob has now sworn vengeance on literally anyone affiliated with that tribal council, even those who did not vote against Nathan. So that might be a foregone conclusion. But if Rob asked any other of them, they'd be like, no, Nicole was totally fine with voting out Nathan. It just seems like she is really trying to just climb her way out of a pit that she dug for herself. Granted, I think she did make a good decision in, like, going specifically to CPAY, and we can certainly talk about the shared idol stuff, especially considering the company that we have in this podcast to discuss with. But man, to see that extended sense of pitches and the way that she tried to, you know, really spin herself to each person seemingly successfully right now, though, I think that she has forever, I think, not burned the bridge, but the bridge is definitely, like, seared. You know, it's flame grilled. Yeah. It really is, you know, it's really cindering, smoking right now.
That's why it was so weird to me that she would draw all that negative attention to herself during the challenge for no. I mean, she can't really believe that talking about food would make everyone drop out. So she knows she's just annoying everybody for no real reason, except for me, who, again, like you, Shannon, was very entertained. And what highlighted the cuisines of mutton, caramelized figs, chicken pie, and oxtail stew as things that I never dreamed about while I was out playing the game. But maybe we'll next time.
Yeah, well, everything she was doing this episode. So on the second viewing, I actually was more impressed with what she was able to do, because by the end of it, I think the half idol was like kind of the key. I mean, it literally, I think, is a key. But I think it was because Rob and CPAY by the end are kind of happy with her. And, you know, I think that was really meaningful for them. But besides that, I thought it was hilarious. She sits down with Rob after 2 days of evading the questions, and she's like, ask me anything. And he's like, what the hell happened with Nate? Like, what else would he possibly want to know? You know, like, she was evading it. She was being so dramatic.
Yeah.
And even though CPAY asked her during the feast, the party line from all four of the people who voted for Nathan should have been, he wanted to quit. He wanted to go home before the merge, before jury. I think in South Africa, they don't do pre-jury. So he wanted to go back to his family, make that the party line. I mean, it's in all of their best interest to do that. And she should have said that right from the beginning. She eventually does give a version of that to Rob, but 2 days later, after the heavy sighing, it's like it's too late. I think that's definitely what she should have been doing from the get-go. Somehow she managed all of this. She's giving away Nathan's possessions like he had a will. And if I was Rob, I would be like, this necklace is a way worse gift than a half idol. But I guess it did somehow work for her. She's kind of half back in with the amigos, but just so hilarious to me this episode.
Well, I think that I agree that I think in the short term, she's definitely back under the fold and that she was voting with them. But it is really interesting to see. It's really interesting to see how, again, CPAY nearly voted out in episode one. Now, pretty much Rob's number two. You know, I think that now Rob lost his bro in Nathan. He really, you know, has lost a close relationship with Nicole. And it seems like he's really stringing her along to the point where the two of them were planning, hey, let's take both halves of the idol and then we'll vote out Nicole, only for Nicole to I thought this was another interesting, you know, play on her part, essentially holding the half idol hostage. But being like, yes, CPAY, we can share the idol, which, by the way, if you vote me out, this idol is essentially null and invalidated. And then Steffi is someone who he hasn't trusted either. I thought Steffi actually had maybe the best response to this. And that's because maybe Steffi has just been PO'd at Nathan for the entire second half of the pre-merge, where she's like, yeah, that makes sense. God, Nate was the worst. He wanted to quit all the time. So it totally makes sense he would want to do it this time. But it's just so interesting to see how, you know, CPAY has really risen through the ranks of the former amigos to now it seems like Rob and CPAY are really confiding in one another. But Rick, I would love to turn to you because this is another, you know, half idol thing. You know, obviously you and David had a little bit of a situation with in the beginning of that post merge. What did you think about now the fact that, as CPAY says, her and Nicole are married by idol?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would also point out, if you ask CPAY, she's running everything. So you want to talk about her power. But yeah, when David and I each had half of an idol, first of all, the big difference, of course, we were forced to each have half an idol. although I guess he could have given it back. We called it child custody as opposed to a marriage. We had to take care of our baby, which was the idol. And based on the way that I know I felt about it, and that I'm pretty sure I can speak for David too, it's a pretty bold strategy by Nicole, but it's a pretty good one, because you definitely do not want to vote out the other half of your idol. I mean, that is a huge tool in your game. So that person has to be a huge threat for you to want to get rid of them versus basically anybody else. So even though my instinct is always, if you have an idol, keep it and don't tell anybody. I thought that this seemed to work out for Nicole. I mean, we saw Rob and C-Pay talking alone, and they seemed to be into it. Maybe she's not where she was before, but the fact that Rob wants to kill everybody except Nicole when she's the only one who truly betrayed him, I think pretty good job out of her. The whole apology tour was such a struggle, but in the end, it seems to have gotten there.
Yeah, this was my favorite thing she did strategically in the episode, as I've spoken so much about how hilarious I found the apology tour. But I don't love that she lost an ally and basically her idol from this one unnecessary move last week. Like, that's an unfortunate thing to lose. And, you know, that's on her. She needed to give away half the idol that she was holding and that wasn't Nathan's, because she had, like, screwed up so badly and lost so much trust. It did bring her back a bit. But she obviously loses half an idol in that, and now her half an idol is useless to her. So it worked. It seemed to work for Rob and C-Pay. She is in those really, really crucial talks that Rob and C-Pay and then kind of Jacques is having, which they kind of seem like they were in the middle as well. So she has some power there. But I just think, like, also, what is her reputation? Like, that's what I'm saying is, like, when she gets to the end, she's seen as super disloyal. Now Meryl is, like, you know, mayor of Ponderosa. She has no love lost for Nicole. I worry that her reputation, with the viewers maybe, and also with the players, is taking a bit of a nosedive. And if it keeps going in this direction, she may, you know, be drawing dead at a point.
Yeah, it's so interesting.
I think that's a real threat.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see Meryl's side of things. Because, I mean, we've seen, you know, Meryl's not exactly the most objective mouthpiece, right? Her and Nicole have really been butting heads since Ta'alo 2.0 and the, hey, you should start digging, we're about to swap soon. And Nicole's sort of like, you know, play act digging, which is so fun. And that's another, you know, fantastic end to this storyline, that after all this sparring, and Nicole ends up being part of the alliance to take Meryl out. But, you know, Meryl says some really interesting stuff in her her, you know, post-game press, the videos on the website, where she's saying, you know, I want people who are playing consistently, people who have been, you know, in the game from the beginning. And she feels like Nicole's game is almost like too fast, too soon, and she says that she's going to burn out. And I wonder if that's sort of like, I mean, again, it's a very subjective perspective, considering that there's no love lost between the two of them. But I mean, considering the way Nicole was acting towards them, and coupled with the fact that Meryl says she's a hugely social player, maybe even superficially so, I don't know if she thinks, you know, she's a guaranteed loser at this point. I know that, not to spoil anything for you, Rick, but last season I made a very similar argument about a certain character at the merge. So granted how that went, I'm hesitant to say that she necessarily thinks that she's already, you know, disbarred from a win at this point. But the way that she's been behaving towards people, coupled with, I guess, the way it's being perceived from others that are starting to join the jury, is going to be a very interesting discrepancy. I could see something where Nicole makes it to the end, thinks she has played this awesome, quote unquote, heroic game, and then gets lambasted by the jurors, who are saying, like, what do you mean? Look at all this disloyal stuff you did.
Yeah, yeah, I think that it's much more likely that she thinks that she's playing the best game and that fans at home are going, wow, I'm so glad I have someone to root for, someone that represents justice out there. That's what I think is probably going through her head.
But what I love about it is that, as from a character standpoint, it's that she started out so normal. And then there's a couple of things where you're like, that's a little off. Like the crying lie about the idol. And then in this episode, it was like, okay, yeah, so Nicole might be actually crazy. Like, it's kind of like Angelina for me. Like, there was a little couple of little things, and then Jacketgate happened, and you were like, oh, okay, so we're off the deep end now, you know? So that's why, just where I see her trajectory going. Like, all credit to her. I think the casuals are kind of being not great to her on social media. She's just completely taking it really well. I think she put out that gun photo you talked about, Mike. She retweeted my jokes about her, which is a ballsy move, by the way. Like, don't respond, just retweet. amazing. I felt very spare. So, you know, I think she's dealing with it really well. But just like in the game, and, I feel like in this amazing cast, she's like almost becoming the breakout character for me, especially just the way she was in this episode.
That's what I would say as a viewer, like whether you want to play with her out there or not. But as a viewer, like, thank goodness mm-hmm. for people like Nicole. She's playing hard. She's bringing it to every conversation, whether it translates or not. Oh, I love it. Absolutely. She's terrific.
Yeah, I completely
but
agree.
If I was out there, I would be like Jeff and say, oh, I wanted to just tell you to shut up.
Well, I guess moving towards the vote a bit, because I do want to speak about Shannon. You brought this up before, and we got a couple of questions as to, you know, this was a close 7-6 vote with Jacques' extra vote legacy advantage thingy. And there were some questions as to, you know, are Jacques and Kribbis and Letitia in trouble now because they voted in the minority? And I think, you know, there was one pretty crucial, like, 2-minute scene before Tribal Council, where I think it's understandable why we got these questions, because if you miss it or if you misinterpret it, then the vote really doesn't make much sense. But basically what happened is, you know, I really think this, it's the Spit Shake Seven have all stuck together. But as we saw again, you know, while everyone else was taking a dip in that waterfall, it seems like Old Ta'alo was trying to reignite the flames here, and that Dante and Merle went to Jacques and Kribbis and said, yeah, this is what's going on. You know, we should all work together again because it's just us left. Remember how we started the game? Wasn't that so much fun? How much we hated Tanya? And Jacques brings up a good point in his confessional of, you know, essentially saying, we're going to get rid of Merle, but I want to string Dante along. Because if he finds an advantage or he, you know, wins immunity, I want to make sure that I am in relative control of where he's going, or at least I know what's happening to him. And so from what I get a sense of, and you see this in the voting confessionals as well on the website, they both threw their votes towards Jeff to essentially, you know, throw out a reel of false loyalty. I would say it's akin to in Survivor Token Sheens, when at the coach vote at the final five, JT knows that coach is going, but votes with him so that he could turn and say, I didn't betray you. Steven did. I'm the one that stuck loyal to you. Please give me your jury vote. Essentially, Jacques and Kribbis, I feel like both did that, and that they can still go to Dante and say, yeah, Meryl's gone, but you know what? Hey, we still voted together. So tell us if you have an idol, which I think it's a pretty smart move. Yes, it ended up with a close vote, but I would say that the people in power, Jacques and Kribbis included, knew it was going to be a close vote. So while it was surprising to Jeff, it really wasn't surprising to anybody else.
Yeah.
And I love that. And I love that everyone went along with that, but that it also leaves the door open for Jeff and Kribbis working with Dante.
Yeah.
And actually sticking with him, which I think would be interesting.
Well, here's why the move works for me, and here's why it doesn't, because I didn't like it, I think, as much as you guys did. It works because Dante comes back from the challenge and is like, great, Steffi's gone. Now we have me, Letitia, Merrill, Jacques' extra vote, and Kribbis. That's six. That's the majority. And that actually was the six people that voted with Dante tonight, but unfortunately 6-13 with that extra vote is out. So they could come back from the tribal council and be like, Dante, we did your plan, man. What the hell happened? Like, we were supposed to be the majority, right? Like, did no one count on their fingers how this was supposed to work? So all the people Dante wanted to work with did exactly what he wanted, and that wasn't a winning vote. But the reason that I don't like it is, as you bring up, Rick, from someone like Rob's perspective, it does leave, obviously, that connection to Dante. You know, if someone's a double agent, like, say, Cochrane was in South Pacific, then they can actually switch to the other side. And then from Jacques and Kubis' perspective, I didn't love it because I just think, why try to appease Dante? Like, for me, Dante has no power. Unless you're literally scared he's going to come back and murder you because you didn't vote with him, I think that in the game, Jeff is a more important person to keep on side. They clearly did not tell Jeff that he was getting six votes. I don't know who else knew. Did Mike know, for example? And Mike is saying to Jeff earlier in the episode, Jacques is someone we can work with. Well, this is the first time Jacques and Jeff have met. Like, is Jeff really going to work with someone who put his name down twice? Like, think about how Michelle felt about Ty when she put his name down twice. Like, it's a deep wound. I think Jeff is someone who's more important in the game to keep on side. He's a better strategist. He comes with numbers than someone like a Dante, who really is pretty powerless. And he needs you more than you need him. So I don't really know why they threw votes, especially with Jacques, two votes into that side. When it's such a powerless side and you piss off more important people. So for me, I thought it was overplaying to a degree. I think Jacques being a super fan, might really, really want to use his two votes well and make it kind of a cool strategic thing. But I don't think that it was necessary, even though I liked a lot of what they were doing this episode, Jacques and Corvus.
But here's what I love about it, Shannon, is that, first of all, Jacques got complete permission from what we could say, that everyone was like, yeah, go ahead. So he's not upsetting anybody. And now next week, if something happens where he starts to feel like he would be at the bottom of that Jeff, Mikey, Rob, Mamba, you know, group, we believe that Jacques and C-Pi and Doral are like a super tight core, right? So yeah. If C-Pi and Doral flip over with Leticia, Jacques, Dante, and Quibus, is that, and then they have Steph, who was going to vote against Jeff anyway, Steffi, then you have a whole swap. And Jacques leaves that whole door open because he didn't vote against Dante, and everyone on the other side was okay with that.
I think that does depend, though, on, like, so many fractures and so many people. Like, that means, like, Cipe is betraying Rob and, like, so many things. For me, this was a 10-2 vote. Like, it was basically a unanimous vote. I even think, based on a secret scene, as I said, that Leticia was in on the fact that Jeff was not going home, even though she was voting for him. So I just feel like Dante's left alone now. And even if you don't vote with him, who else is he going to turn to? Like, he may need you anyway. If you need a number, Dante may be there. I think how much of this was motivated by wanting to play this in a cool way? How much was motivated by the fear of coming back from Tribal Council, having not voted in Dante's 6-13 plan and having him choke you?
Well, so, I think you're counting out a third factor, though, and that's looking across at those 10 seats on the jury. I think that, you know, yes, it's only two
votes.
You're
going to have to vote him out eventually.
You have to vote him out eventually, but I think it's a balance of, do we jumpstart a completely new relationship with someone I've never met before, or do I try to continue this relationship with people who, you know, I essentially started the game with? And it's a balance as to whether or not you want to sort of pursue it. Rick, you're someone who also had to balance that decision in terms of, do I keep with the people I played the entire game with, or do I essentially try to start over with a new crowd that might guarantee me a better place in the game? It seems like Jacques and Corbis, I think they essentially had their cake and ate it too. They had their carrot cake and ate it too, in that they were able to still maintain this relationship with someone that, you know, has ties with, and that they know is going to be a juror and might feel completely and utterly betrayed if their, you know, OG Ta'alo member split his throat, versus, you know, also getting permission from the main alliance to be like, yeah, oh yeah, you should absolutely do that, which I'd say this is more of a questionable thing on Rob's part than it is on Jacques and Kubrick's part.
Right. Yeah. Even Jeff said it's going to be 7-6 and seemed fine with that. So that's the main thing for me, is like, if they're okay with it and you can keep Dante close with you, that's great. If you're shocking the rest of the tribe just to keep Dante close with you, that's probably not worth it.
But yeah, I didn't feel like Jeff knew.
Give me permission, okay.
I didn't, because Jeff was really, I mean, unless it was an amazing act, I really don't think that at Tribal Council, he seemed to know that he was getting 6 votes. Like, maybe he thought he would be getting several, just if those people were on Dante's side in actuality. But I think that, you know, they were on Jeff's side, but he was the one getting votes. And if they didn't come to him to ask permission, then this is not the situation for me where you go and ask forgiveness. Because if you think he's going to be too upset to go to him and say, hey, Jeff, in this very risky, delicate merge vote of 13 votes, we're going to put 6 on you. And if you think he's not going to like that, then how much less will he like it tomorrow when you actually did it? So if it's the kind of thing you're too scared to tell him as a, you know, probable or potential ally, then it's the kind of thing you shouldn't have done, because I don't know if Jeff can get over that. I don't know if people should be going out of their way to vote incorrectly. You know, like, your parchment, what you write on the paper is basically like the best thing you have to show trust at a merge vote, especially, which is such a table setting vote, which is so important. I would not be putting my hand up to voting correctly. I think it came more from Jacques and Rob. I don't blame Kubas as much, because I feel like he's just going with whatever until he can get power and just kind of did what he was told. But I just wouldn't be putting my hand up to voting correctly. It's such an important vote.
I should also mention that I know we're assigning stuff to Rob, and it makes sense because he really does seem like, at least from a narrative perspective, one of the figureheads of this alliance. But it actually was C-Pay who suggested in that all-important scene that Jacques and Kubas stack their votes. And yeah, I guess going back to what Rick said, I would love to talk about C-Pay's position as well, because we talked about this last time, how I think we all sort of were in agreement that C-Pay had probably the best position going into the merge. I think she still is, because while, you know, I think her and Rob sort of share control of the supermajority at this point, it really does seem like Rob is the one that's being regarded as the figurehead. And I feel like the optimal position is C-Pay's of like, yes, I know she's worried about making decisions and being targeted for being the one to make the decisions, but it really does seem like everyone's looking to Rob, and maybe just because of his startling eyes or his bulky physique. But it does seem like everyone's looking towards him as like the mouthpiece, when C-Pay is the one who's really, you know, whispering behind the scenes and is helping make the decision. So she really benefits from having those decision-making powers while getting none of the blowback.
I totally agree. She's got a huge shield in Rob, and she's got a lot of little shields around her. I think C-Pay is in a great position to make a run at the game. And just while we're talking about Rob real quick, I do want to give a shout-out to Quibus, who was trying to take that Nathan, that little buddy position while they were building the shelter. I thought that that was just showed what a great read on the game he has and was just really funny. Like, I'm a big Quibus fan.
He might honestly be like the most intentionally quotable person of the season. This episode in particular.
Underratedly hilarious.
I sign off on that 100%. But
this episode, he had the welcome to my party. He had that fantastic dialogue with C-Pay. She's like, how did this end up being crooked? And he's like, you know, not everything needs to be straight. He called Dante an angry smurf when he got covered in the blue liquid. So, like, I'm all in on Quibus. He started off as a little bit of like, a whiny pants in the little part of the pre-merge when he was against Nathan. But I think now he's totally like on cloud nine. As a result, we get these fantastic sound bites from him.
And even then, when he was calling out Nathan for the drama, I was still signing off on Quibus.
Yeah, but I mean, we talk about Rob, you know, Quibus is still trying to work with Rob. This big, obvious threat, Mike calls him his number one. He's obviously got a great thing with C-Pay. Nicole is, you know, trying to make that work. So Rob is in such a good position, like so much better than he should be at such a big, obvious threat. And I'm actually just impressed by the fact that he and C-Pay, I think, kind of ran this vote. As I've said, the swing votes between these two, OG Ta'alo and OG Lao Mei, and I just see them right there in the middle of the table. And for Rob, it's amazing to me that people are still trying to work with him and that his name's not being thrown out at all. People were scared when Rocco went, oh, there'll be no shield for Rob. He literally wasn't even on anyone's radar. So I'm happy with the way Rob's going right now. And Quibus, I love Quibus in this episode. I have to give him so much credit that the Spit Shake 7 was so important, and that's his thing. And we didn't even hear one name from the Spit Shake 7 thrown out there. And that benefits someone like Quibus so much, considering he lost so many allies in the pre-merge by the fact that they were Meryl and Dante and he doesn't want to work with them anymore, by the fact that they were voted out in other tribes like Felix. And he doesn't really have a lot right now, but he made the Spit Shake 7, which is an alliance seemingly made kind of between all these randoms the day before a merge. It really should hold no weight at all, but I think it was the dominant thing to come out of this episode, and it was a thing kind of controlling the vote in a really broad perspective. So I have to give a lot of credit to Quibus there for pulling that off.
And I will,
and that was even without Steffi there, who seems to be one of the biggest proponents of that set.
Yeah.
And I also, going back to Rob, it does seem like while him and C-Pay again are sort of like 1A and 1B in terms of power position on this tribe, it seems like from what we were getting narrative wise, he was the one specifically behind targeting Meryl. He kept bringing out that one quote, if we give Meryl enough rope, she's going to hang us all. I think he was particularly proud of that one. I will say, by the way, I have fallen in love with Rob's confessionals. They're not nearly they're not nearly as quotable as Quibus is, but like Rob speaks in such a calculated and slow and deliberate manner that it's just, you feel the gravity on each and every word that he says, which is just like, it's really fun because it's very it's very down tempo. It's not as energetic and excitable as you might get with other confessional givers. But I think if Rob was the one to really decide on Meryl particularly, I think this was totally the right decision, because how many times have we seen in Survivor history's past someone like Meryl be able to benefit from bigger targets like your Dantes, or even someone like Jeff on the other side. And as a result, she's able to really get along with everybody, spend the time that she has on the island to make sure that everyone says, we can't vote Meryl off. She's on the other side, but you know what? She's a hell of a person to get along with. And slip into like the final six or final five, there Meryl is, and she's in a position of power, surprisingly enough. I give the Majority Alliance all the credit for having that foresight, seeing what could possibly happen if they kept Meryl around, and as a result, not only getting rid of her, but getting rid of her in a way where she did not see it coming whatsoever, where if she does pull a Jacques and find another idol immediately upon getting to the new camp, she was not going to play it whatsoever, because she was convinced that Nicole or even Dante was going above her.
Yeah, and what I do think might have helped Dante and not her is that Dante is seen as the physical threat and Meryl is seen as the strategic threat. And she played into what they thought was threatening about her by having those conversations, whereas Dante was second out of the challenge. So maybe they're thinking, OK, well, maybe he won't win every challenge, you know. And I do think it would actually be good for Dante to start losing some challenges, doing like really badly in the challenges, which I don't think is going to happen. But I think that he didn't play into that physical threat role. I feel very good about him, you know, being Aquaman in the next challenge. We see that awesome challenge where they're kind of under those grates and trying to breathe. So I feel like maybe the streak will start next week. But I feel like for Meryl, I agree that it was a good decision. I think it was a good decision for pretty much everyone. That's why it was, you know, it was the obvious boot. It's 13 people. I mean, 13 votes. Steffi's on Island of Secrets. This is someone everyone can agree on, and it makes so much sense for them. And I think that they all can see pathways down the line where they will have numbers and they have so many various connections that they can think, okay, at 11 or 9 or whatever, whenever I actually want to start playing the game in a bit more aggressive manner, I'll have those numbers to do that. It doesn't seem like a dire number situation for anyone now where you need to be keeping these outsiders around. So I agree that the Meryl vote made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, and I thought she was in a tough position. I thought she did everything right that she could. Like, she really hustled. She talked to everybody. She literally was massaging Duro on the beach. I mean, and I thought she was really pleasant and funny in the way that she would play bumper between Dante and whoever he was mad at. I loved that little, I'm going to miss that duo. But I actually don't think Dante's in as bad a shape as you guys seem to think. I think the fact that he's burnt all those bridges makes him to start to look like some, like, I almost think, first of all, like you guys said, I agree that Rob, it's amazing that he's not talked about as a target being who he is, but it's only a matter of time. And I think these people that aren't really connected to Rob, but that voted with him this time, could very easily go, do we want to go with Rob, who's really, really close with Nicole and Cipe and maybe Mikey, or do we want to go with Dante, who's close with nobody and could lose it at any time? Like, I almost think Dante, even though he's at the very bottom, is almost as good in as good a shape as Rob, who's at the very top. Just because of the way they're perceived.
But I do think that Rob has so many connections that it's like, who is turning against him? You know, like, I almost think he has enough numbers now to have a majority with Cipe and Nicole and Steffi and then Mike and Kubas. All these people like just really want to work with him. It's like a magnetic quality, which I totally understand, by the way. And Mike, you talk about what amazing confessionals he has. This was like the best quote. He said, with Nate gone, part of me left with him in this game. And I fear it's the part that was going to play nice. And then like the music cue, and it was like the perfect reaction to Nathan going home. Like, it was chilling. He became godfather like I've seen in this episode, you know, saying the amigos are not happy about this. Like, it's so dramatic, it's so great, it works so well in the episode. And I think Rob is in a very good position still.
Yeah, we get to see what happens if Boston Rob had lost Amber in Survivor All Stars and that hinky swap. I feel like that's what we're seeing
Rob
now.
And Nathan or Rob and Amber.
Yeah, with all the, like, he essentially lost his Amber and now he's like getting revenge, which is going to be a really interesting storyline. I totally agree with you, Rick, that the Meryl
Amber never would have made such a big deal about a sprained ankle or a cut on her hand.
Yeah, no, Amber would said, oh my God, my hand's so bad. I
can't pull, guys.
I totally agree with you, Rick, about the Meryl Dante combo, specifically in the beginning where Dante's like, I told you that Nicole is unstable, and she's emotional, and Meryl says, yeah, but you're unstable, and Dante says, yeah, I'm unstable, but I keep my word. Like, I give it to Dante for, you know, being a little, you know, self-realizing, but at the same time, I love him, like, acknowledging, like, yeah, good on Meryl for at least calling him out a little bit on some of that hypocritical stuff he was spouting out there.
Yeah, Meryl was so great. She's the Dante whisperer.
Such a good skill to have. So unfortunate couldn't save her. I want to heap a little bit more praise on some of these players before I talk about Steffi. Because I really did think that a lot of people in this episode did so many good things. The Chizzy was so hard for me this week because I was so impressed by so many people. You know, I talked about how I didn't like the move from Jacques, but I still love so much of what he was doing. I feel like he's had like such an image overhaul since, yep. You know, the Ting Ting stuff happened way back when. Let's just forget about that. But now it's like a lot of people want to work with him. He's in those really core conversations. He tells Rob about his advantage. Why not? It's kind of an irrelevant piece of information, but he kind of is like making those bonds. And I feel now he's seen as like not as much of a threat as he should be. He's not seen, you know, as someone who's so sneaky and such a snake as he was before. I think a lot of people, like Jeff, for example, have kind of leaped over him into being that really sneaky player. And Jacques is just like in the shadows. As he says, he wants to just kind of lay low for a while and then make his moves. And I really love where Jacques is in the game right now.
It's so interesting how, yet again, theme of Island of Secrets, a power gets found out, because I love both sides saying, okay, we've got Jacques and we've got Jacques' extra vote. And like, did Darrow, you know, spin his mouth again while he was eating those milkshakes? How do people know about Jacques' extra vote? But I think it was a great idea because it essentially, you know, I think he wanted to come off as an asset to both sides. And he was able to do so by saying, you not only do you have me, but you have an extra vote. So if that was the goal of the vote, without necessarily sticking out like a sore thumb, I think that he really succeeded on both those counts.
Yeah.
Who are Jacques' people right now? I mean, we were led to believe coming into the merge that Cipe and Darrow were his real close alliance, right?
Yeah. I mean, Mike also called him out then saying, you know, Jacques could work with us. He obviously does have Cipe and Darrow, but we saw him in conversations as well with Rob and, you know, a lot of conversations with Rob, as I said, the advantage one, then in those key conversations about the vote, Kulbis is kind of doing similar things to him. So maybe they kind of patch things
up. Those were supposed to be his family. I was just wondering where you all think Cipe is. Cause I remember we talked so much about what a family that trio was, but from this episode, it looked like Cipe was more, much more with Rob than them. So I just wondered where you think that is.
I still think that she's got her misfits. You know, she sent Darrow to get his idol. I think that maybe it's not as obvious because Rob and Cipe are being two of the biggest power players in the game. You're going to notice those conversations, but maybe she's looking out for Jacques and for Darrow on the DL. And I do think those connections are why, you know, Jacques obviously is voting correctly and is part of the conversations. Right. They're not voting out Lao Mei members because of connections like Cipe and Darrow. And that's why the Meryl vote made so much sense because it every single connection was honored here. It's a hard thing to do when there are so many connections that are so disparate from each other. With Meryl, they were actually able to do that. So this is all going to come out because, you know, Mike, for example, his two main connections are Jeff and Rob, who are, you know, in this war. That's a decision he's definitely going to have to make soon. And I honestly don't know which way he will go. Yeah. They were lucky now that they basically got to have a procrastinate vote, which the merge vote in big groups so often is. But a couple of votes from now, some people are going to be making some core decisions to cut key allies so that they can work with other key allies.
Jeff is going to want to get rid of Rob sooner than later.
Unless Rob says, we're going to vote off Jeff, but Mike, you can vote with Jeff just to make sure
we'll do this whole game.
That you're in good with him, because then Mike's great. I think that, yeah, it's really a double-edged sword that Mike faces right now, because it is interesting how everyone is jockeying to be Rob's number one, but Rob's number one is actually Mike. It's really interesting how Mike really found that coveted position of the new Nathan, and I think that I don't know if he necessarily wants to waste that, especially because Rob is in such a more powerful position than Jeff is at this point. But I think the position that Mike is in right now at this vote is great because, like you were just talking about with Jacques, he has outs. He's provided a bunch of outs for himself where even if one side does get rid of him, he could try to do the Will Wall-esque pendulum strategy of, you know, he has multiple people to hop between. Seems like nobody's really talking about him. You know, Meryl calls him out in her Ponderosa video as someone that she really thinks is playing the game well in terms of just being super likable and making a lot of really great connections. So it's been really interesting to see Mike's game separately from the other two, since he has been separate from them, you know, for the past two pretty pivotal votes. And now that they're coming together, you know, Mike has new friends to play with as well. I honestly could really see him siding with Rob just because of him going with the power and knowing, like, you know what, I'd rather get in close with Rob and see if I can, you know, stab him in the back later on than purposely, you know, throw myself behind these people that are outsiders. Jeff was, even though he did end up surviving, by a pretty large margin, you know, Rogue votes aside, he is the person that was the other name on the chopping block. Rob basically promised everyone, we're going to get rid of Jeff next time. So I wonder if Mike sees the writing on the wall and says, I want to maintain this relationship, but I'm also not going to risk my own game by cutting off my relationship with the power player right now.
Yeah, I think that I love a lot of what Mike is doing because it just pays off that social connections that we've talked about. He's in a really, really good spot with so many different people. And I'm surprised, as you are, that I could see Rob, like the connection that he made only a couple of episodes. I could see that being the one that wins out over the Laomei 3, which is one of the tightest groups we've seen in the game from the very, very, very beginning. And I think maybe it'll be down to the fact that Jeff and Marba don't have a lot of options. And like Rob is just the obvious vote, but he's definitely got a great plan B there in his connection with Rob.
Can we also talk about Letitia as well? I know this is super random.
She's been here the whole time, Mike.
I know, but
don't you know?
But what I love about it is, so Nicole, was it Nicole and Steffi were talking at the well?
At the well.
Yeah.
Yes. And she was invisible.
Yeah, she was meeping in the background, which I absolutely loved, but I think that like maybe that's a very telling confessional as to how, like, you might be able to lock Letitia into, like, the final five or final six at this point. I know I said it previously in the pre-merge, but, like, especially with the way people are gunning for each other now, who's going to waste a vote on Letitia? And I know that she said in a secret scene how she was miffed that she's essentially been, like, you know, not in on the plan, that she's sort of been used as a pawn vote. But the pawn is in a pretty comfortable position right now. Maybe she'll be able to be in position in a couple of rounds where she could be that swing vote to make moves. And I don't know if that necessitates a winning game, but I just think it was very poignant how, you know, outside of her connection with Rocco bashing her leg open, we didn't really hear much about Letitia, but the fact that she was essentially disregarded in these super important conversations to the point where she could essentially lurk in the background and get this information that can be weaponized down the line is, it's good on her part and not so great on Nicole and Steffi's part that they let that conversation happen in front of her.
I thought it was amazing. I thought I was watching a Harry Potter movie where, like, we could see under the coat of invisibility, but they couldn't. And I think she's an absolute lock for the finals. I can't imagine ever turning on her, despite the fact that I do think she's going to be a key swing vote in a couple things. I just don't think that she'll get blame or credit. It's like the double-edged sword. But yeah, I think she's going to make huge decisions in the game and is a lock for the finals right now. I'll absolutely.
Yeah, I think they're going to think it's a final two, and then Nico's going to be like, okay, final three, and whoever else is there is going to be like, oh, Letitia! Hey! Like, you didn't realize she was here too. So, I mean, the only reason I could think they'll be getting rid of her is if she becomes a nuisance, because I know in the secret scene, she seemed irritated that the Spit Shake 7 weren't really working with her and, like, kind of aggressively pursuing her vote or anything like that. So maybe she'll kind of annoy them into voting her out. You know, obviously, maybe she won't work into everyone's plans because they have so many other connections. It might be another procrastinate vote where she's just not connected to anyone. Or someone could pull a Suri and be like, this woman is making it to the final tribal council and she's taking my spot, so bye-bye. So I think those are the ways we could see her go, but I don't see her going anytime soon. Like, it's not like they're gonna, like, say get rid of Dante and then be like, well, Letitia, you were next on the table. Like, there's just absolutely no chance of that happening. So she's in a good spot. I love Letitia. I'm so glad to see more of her, even if the other contestants can't for some reason. It's just odd to me.
Oh boy. All right, Shannon, I know you want to talk about Steffi.
I've been waiting so long. Can I address Steffi directly?
Please do. We know she's listening.
Before you get into Steffi, can I address real quick just the actual immunity necklace?
Ooh, yeah. Mm.
All of the props on this show are awesome. The immunity trophies are up to this point, and then now the necklace, the torches, like, bravo, Survivor South Africa. That octopus is so cool.
Yeah. My fiance was obsessed with the fact that, like, why is everything about octopi in this season? But we did actually get intel on that. Mm-hmm. It is, you know, it's the theme is based on the Samoan god who turned into an octopus. That's a terrible superpower, by the way. Like, I mean, what could you really do as an octopus? But apparently that's what it's based on. And it's so beautiful. Like, more seasons should be based around octopi.
Shannon, you can do anything.
I'm so glad that Letitia got the invisibility power and not the octopi power. Because that would have been really awkward at the well.
Could you imagine if they're like, what is this octopus doing here? Oh, well, let's spill all of our secrets. Maybe that's Letitia's power. And that's why she was so unhappy about getting one of her legs bashed in. She's like, oh, no, that's one down, seven to go. I can't become a septopi.
I think we're onto something.
Look, as long as it's Letitia and not Dante, because you don't want eight fists. That's just a problem.
Can you imagine? Nathan would have been life flighted out of there if he had fallen like Letitia.
And I have to, one of the things I just do thinking about it with Dante is when Rob votes out Meryl and he like holds up the necklace like for Nathan. It's like Meryl was one of the people voting with Nathan last week. Like she was his actual ally, or so she thought. So I don't know why that was like a revenge vote, or maybe he's just going to hold up the necklace at every vote, no matter who it is. Okay, Steffi, we need to talk. We need to talk about something. And that thing is, I understand you don't like people. I get it. You know, it's not great for Survivor, but you don't want to be around people. You need time to yourself, even though you were on the Island of Secrets 2 episodes ago, getting that time to yourself. You want a nap? Believe me, I get it. I love naps. But you can't be napping during the merge vote. The merge vote is maybe the most important vote of the season. I think I was doing this off the top of my head, but in the 44 seasons that we've had of the two Survivor South Africa seasons we've covered, 2 Survivor New Zealand seasons, 3 Australia, and I did 37 US seasons because I didn't really know what to do about Chris and Edge of Extinction. So 44 seasons, 3 winners have voted incorrectly at the merge. It is incredibly important to be at the merge, to be setting the table for what is going to be a lot of things to come in the next few votes, and to vote correctly at the merge with your people. And the fact that she was like, nah, I would be happier with the nap is just so hilarious to me. Having immunity at the merge vote is a gift. Like, you can't be voted out. You have so much power. You can do what you want. And she couldn't even give immunity to anyone else. She goes to the Island of Secrets. As far as I know, she didn't know about Jacques' vote. So she thinks she's in a spit shake 7. You need 6, you know, 7 people in a majority of 13. I can't believe she wasn't there just to make sure everything went okay. And not for any other reason other than just being like, I just couldn't today. Like, I could not with the merge vote. And this is really not good strategy, I don't think.
Can I just point out quickly that I voted wrong at the merge vote? One of my many wrong votes. Go on, Mike.
I would be there, Rick, saying to you, Rick, it doesn't look good for you because only 3 out of 44 people so far voted correctly at the merge vote.
Well, spoiler alert, you nailed it.
Yeah. I will say, Steffi's decision aside, I really like this twist, and I actually hope we use it for like maybe the next vote and maybe one more vote down the line, because I think this is a really...
Steffi will win every single week and never ever go to tribal council. Yeah, like, she will do.
But I think the strategic, maybe in a different person's hands, the strategic elements of this, the possibilities are really endless. Do you send an ally who could be in trouble at tribal council? Like, I personally feel if Meryl or Dante had won immunity, I think the best decision, send the other one, because then they're safe as well. It's almost like granting another person immunity. Do you?
Right.
Because Dante really needed her for that 6, that winning.
It's true. Do you send an enemy to that point so that someone else on the other side of numbers is voted out? Like, you could also say if Dante won, he would have sent Maba to Island of Secrets so that Jeff didn't have her for a vote. Or you could send yourself to take
a day. I think Dante would have done that, assuming that Maba wouldn't have been able to find her way back to survive. I think that's what Dante thinks.
Yeah, that's true. She'll go to the coffee shop. She won't care. She doesn't survive like I would. She's not going to make it back.
Oh, good
into
luck
the game.
Being social out there.
Yeah, socialize with trees.
Your social game.
I think this is a really fun twist, though, because I think it's a way to really, you know, when it comes to decisions being power, I think this is a way to really shake up the game. Steffi, unfortunately, just chose to remove herself from any of that. And maybe it was partially because you would think sending yourself could be a move if you, like, want to remain neutral. Like, if Jacques had won it, maybe he's like, I don't want to show my hand, so let me just remove myself from the equation. But like we've been seeing the past couple of episodes, the reasons people make these decisions are not the reasons that we think they do, because it turns out that Steffi didn't have anything to do with that. She's not playing both sides. She's friendly with the Spit Steak 7. She just wanted another day off, maybe to digest those leftover Sears burgers that they brought back.
But it's even funnier considering she was in that position on Island of Secrets like 6 days ago. It's like, how much time off do you need? You were just there. And I think that there's also so much precedent now that if you're missing a tribal council for Island of Secrets, like, that's probably going to be your advantage. So obviously you have to send someone and think about maybe there's an advantage. But even Steffi was there missing a tribal council and getting nothing else out of it. She's already been there. She knows what it's like. Like, she just wants to hang out in the Sugar Shack and get nothing out of it while everyone's doing the most important vote of the game.
You know, playing devil's advocate, I think if she feels like the vote's going to go off pretty well without her, which if you take a distant view and I'm putting thoughts in her head, it's like, okay, either the seven works out or she can go back with her strong group from her original crew. And she'll know whatever's on the seat. Because even if you think you know that nothing's out there, you're really, really paranoid that someone's getting a huge power. Especially, I could talk myself in the first visit to Island of Extinction as the Merge. Like, who knows what it might be? So I would want to know that. I don't know why she wouldn't give someone the necklace, at least.
Yeah,
I don't know if she was allowed. Because that seems like too much power.
Really? Because in the U.S. version, you can always give the necklace away no matter what.
Yeah, that's true.
So I thought she'd be able to give that away and go herself. But, like, I can see wanting to go out. The fact that they showed the interview, I just want to take a nap, really buries her.
Yeah.
But if she had said, I can't trust anyone else, I need to know what's out here, and it doesn't really matter to me who's voted out because I have a landing spot either way, and I'll know all the secrets, like, then I would have felt totally different about it.
Completely.
And I'm not sure that that clip doesn't exist, so...
Did she ever say nap, or was this like an Mandela effect where it's now like, which is perfect for Survivor South Africa, but is it the kind of thing where we're like, that time that Steffi didn't go to tribal council because she wanted to?
Yeah.
Might be making that up.
She said she wanted to get away from camp for some time alone to think. So I don't know if that thinking was involved in a REM cycle.
As dumb as it is, where does it leave her now? She's actually in, so she had an immunity, that's fine. She doesn't have to worry about anyone having anything that they got at the island, and basically no one's upset with her, right? She can just slip right back in. So it worked out pretty well in the end for her.
For me, that's results oriented. She leaves her Spitshake 7 with six people. It could have not worked out. You want to be there to control it. For me, it's honestly like a decision to make in her position, even if she doesn't have immunity. Like, considering she was pretty well insulated, you almost definitely want to be at that Merge vote. Sure, if you're Dante, you know, go to the Island of Secrets if you're not immune, but I think you really want to be there. And Mike, you said a couple of episodes ago that you felt like her not voting in the Swap Tribe was bad for her because Mike got to put his pen to paper and actually earn some trust with Rob, which Steffi hasn't done because she hasn't been at a tribal council since episode 2 because she's so busy napping on the Island of Secrets. I really do think that even if it went well, she wasn't part of that, this like bonding Merge vote, and it could have easily gone bad. I think that she should have sent, this will be a weird one, but Nicole, because she doesn't want to send any of the Spitshake 7. You got to have that majority. Nicole is sucking up so much to the Amigos. There's probably not going to be an advantage, but she is someone who will probably be telling you about it if it is, and you can kind of reforge that connection. So I think that would have been a good one for her, but just to go sit out. I mean, you're there to play Survivor, Steffi, right? Like, Merge vote. Come on.
So going back,
you know, there are a lot of different levels to Survivor, and there might have been, you know, not being results oriented. What if she'd gone out there and gotten an idol?
Yeah,
that could have been a huge difference maker in the game. I just don't think it's as dumb as you do. I'm playing devil's advocate.
I think the precedent has been set that you're not getting a lot at Island of Secrets if you're missing tribal council. And honestly, is an idol more important than voting at the Merge vote? Maybe, but I just think the Merge vote is so important. All of these numbers, it might be less important at 13 when, you know, you can have procrastinate votes and it's a little bit too big to kind of really have something important, but it's just such a table setting vote for me. And to actively choose not to go there, I think is just crazy from a strategic perspective.
Speaking of idols, so Rick, I would love to get your thoughts on this idea of Island of Secrets, because you're no stranger to, you know, this mysterious island existing where, you know, you have some powers that maybe you could send to other people, maybe you could keep for yourself. And it does seem like a lot of idols are specifically coming from the Island of Secrets, as opposed to your sort of tried and true method of looking in the camp itself. How do you feel about Island of Secrets? Obviously, it's tough to compare it to Edge of Extinction, which is the island you know and love, but do you have any thoughts about it in general, especially as a manner of giving out powers?
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. I think it's clever. I think, you know, on our season, the reason we didn't find a lot, the only reason we had idols found at the very beginning and then real late in the game, is because we really did think everything was coming from the Edge of Extinction. So I think that that's what the players have figured out about the Island of Idols. But I like that some of the stuff, even though you find out about it out there, you either have to go back to your camp and get it, or we saw at the challenge, right, when Meryl got busted with it. So I've really enjoyed it. And I love, like we were just talking about with Steffi, the ambiguity of it, because it is. It's very easy to say that, you know, they've set, you know, that you know that if you're skipping tribal, it's this, it's this. But as soon as you feel comfortable with something is when Survivor wants to flip it.
Right.
So you never really know. You're always paranoid. If I was in camp, I would always assume that whoever's coming back is coming back with something that's going to screw up my game. And it's going to drive you crazy because of that. And I love that. Just because you don't even need anything. Just the idea that people think there's something and they're paranoid can totally flip the game on its head. And Island of Secrets has been a lot of fun for that. I've really liked it, especially the strategy of, do you send an enemy? Do you send an ally? Like we were just saying before.
I do love with Steffi that one of the things is, okay, well, what if one of your main allies goes home and you're not there to kind of help out? But does Steffi care about any of these people? Like the way she's talking to Nicole, like Nicole pours her heart out for her. And then in confessional, Steffi is like, I don't really care, but 7 is greater than 4, so I'm with the Spit Take 7. Like, are these all just numbers to Steffi? Because then it's like, look, one of them will go home, and I'll just go next time to Island of Secrets 2 until the final 3, and that'll be my game.
It's also interesting.
I think that's exactly what she was thinking. She's totally on her own, and she's just like, no matter what, I'll come back to a soft resting spot. Maybe I'll have an extra advantage. No one will know where I stand, and I just start next vote. No problem.
I think she's going to play a Chris game, Rick, where maybe she won't play until, like, day 35. She'll keep going back to a little shack there on Island of Secrets. And
the Steffi shack.
Some Survivor. Yeah.
Well, I hope she's practicing fire.
Well, it's also interesting that Steffi, I believe, is the first person this season to go back to the Island of Secrets. It is really interesting that, you know, through 8 episodes, we had 8, or no, I guess 10, if you count 3 people in the first episode, 10 different people go to the Island of Secrets, almost half the cast, and Steffi's the first repeat. I guess the question is, you know, if people are empowered, do they keep sending her because they said, let's not disseminate the information. Let's keep one person going, sort of like why they kept sending Terry and Sugar in their respective
seasons.
But
the information is always different. So to me, like, Island of Secrets is too versatile for that to be relevant.
Yeah.
But again, she's the only one who's gone twice, so nobody knows what it's really like. You're only taking other people's word for it. So as much as we know that it's this consistent thing, for all they know, every single other person has lied about what happened to them.
Yeah.
Steffi's the only one who's gone twice and can notice any sort of path.
Wouldn't it be amazing if they just literally didn't give anything on Island of Secrets every time and everyone had to come back and pretend that there was something there?
Well, yeah, like, I was going to say, like, if everyone got a phone call to their dad and then Doral and Nathan's lies are finally validated.
Yeah.
That would be hilarious if every person that came next, they gave them what the person before lied about.
Oh, that'd be amazing. But imagine production if someone came out like, I had a mountain of ice cream and it's been a Siberian tiger, you know, roamed the island.
There were camel rides.
Yeah.
That is an amazing idea. We could call it like Manifest Island, but they could only know that like after the season that that's what they were doing.
Get LaRue on the phone. Yeah. LaRue.
He's listening.
We have a brilliant idea. Fly me to South Africa for the reunion and we'll talk about it.
And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And we are back. All right. Well, with all the strategic talk, we need to talk about why I'm giving the Chizzy to Steffi. No, we need to talk about the Chizzy and who we want to give our points to. So please take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and DJ Color.
1, 2, 3.
All right. Well, I will start because, as I said, this was a difficult week for me because so many people played well. 5 people, and it actually hurts my heart that I had to put 2 of them into honorable mentions because it was a really tough week, and I hope that you guys give them points because I cannot give to everyone. So I'll give a couple of honorable mentions. I'm going to give one to Mike, who, as I said, has put in that really good social work and I think might have been a big factor in actually saving Jeff, in the fact that Rob might want to, you know, come after Jeff, obviously, but that makes it really messy for one of his key allies. So, like, let's put that off for, you know, future Rob's problem. So I like what Jeff was doing. Another honorable mention as well to Jacques, who did so much good stuff in this episode. As I said, the connections he's making, the image that he's now putting out there is so good. I just really didn't like that he voted twice for Jeff when he didn't want Jeff to go home. I know that we're saying that he could work with Dante down the line, but Jacques is actually the one who threw out Dante as a name. You know, he was saying, I don't care which way we go, but whichever way we go, whether it's Meryl or Jeff, we have to knock out their second next week for like that equilibrium. So he's the one who's saying Dante needs to go next week. So that's not someone that you really need to try and win over at the expense of other allies. So I have to demote him to an honorable mention there, unfortunately. I'm going to give a vote to Sipe, who continues to be kind of the center of everything. She just underratedly got half an idol as well in this episode. I love the way she approaches conversations. I know it can be a little heavy-handed, but Nicole called her the mother hen, and just the way that she was even saying to Nicole, like, it's okay, baby. Like, she put so much trust in her that you can give her, and I just really just love the way she approaches the game. So another vote to Sipe. I'm going to give a vote to Rob, who could have flown off the handle here when Nathan was voted out, and may in the future, but in a very cold, calculated way. But he was making logical decisions. He was kind of mending the fences with people, at least, you know, from the outside. And I think he was, you know, again, just he has so much power and everyone wants to work with him. But I'm actually going to give two votes to Corbis, who Stitch Take 7 were just so relevant in this episode. None of them were targeted. That really, to me, was his thing that he instigated. He was included in the Meryl vote when he really didn't need to be. Obviously, I didn't say I liked that he voted incorrectly on purpose, but as I've said, I feel like that wasn't his plan, and he was just doing what he was told, which is great for him at this point. And, you know, the rest of Ta'oldlo, the people who weren't, you know, obviously Jacques' his own thing, but Felix, Meryl, Dante, not going so well. And Corbis is like the lone survivor from that, who's actually in a pretty good spot. So I'm going to give two votes to Corbis. Mike, what are you doing?
Wow, that was I did not know where those two votes were coming from. I feel blindsided because you didn't even say he, so I was very confused. All right, so I will give 1 point to Mike for pretty much the same reasons you gave Shannon. I think that everyone is jockeying to be Rob's number one. Mike is actually Rob's number one, and the fact that at the moment he has several outs. Granted, those outs might come to an end very soon, but the fact that he does have maneuverability and yet is not getting any targeting because of that, I think is a great position to be in. I'm going to give 1 point to Rob. His revenge still might, you know, he's still working on his revenge plot one person at a time, and maybe that's not necessarily the best thing to keep your focus on when there's so many other things going on in the game, but I think he put himself in a very powerful position, a great transition from his powerful position at Ta'alo 3.0. And I think the fact that, you know, he was not the one who was getting blowback, Jeff was, as a result, I think hopefully portends well for him really standing in a position of power moving forward. I'm going to give 2 points to Queen Sipe. I think that it's a combination of the position she's in and the position looking forward. I think Nicole had a very, you know, prescient quote when she said that Sipe looks into your soul. And I think that there are a lot of people in this game, in this season, who value authenticity. And that's another reason why I think Meryl has been devaluing Nicole's game, is because she feels like, you know, she's making bonds with you just to make bonds with you and, you know, to use you in the game and then discard you like she did with Nathan and take your hat. Whereas Sipe really does, she's playing the game, but she does seem like someone who's genuinely making connections. And compare, you know, the way that Rob received the Nicole conversation to the way Sipe did, they both had the same reaction, but the way that they, you know, enveloped Nicole is much more positive, and that's what helps keep an ally strung along. Plus, I gave her some bonus points for the fact that she rocked that confessional look. I mean, listen, you got time out there on the island, might as well change your wardrobe up. So I'm all in on Sipe this week, and I think that, you know, I think that there's a whole gaggle of people, to your point, Shannon, that are in really interesting positions. This was definitely the hardest week for chizzing points by far.
What do you think, Rick?
I'm going off board, guys. I love the Quibus and the Sipe picks. And my preface to my picks is that I was so excited about the Rob Revenge Tour this week. And then he embraces Nicole and votes out Meryl. So you lost me. Like, okay. That would have been a bad Taken movie. So honorable mentions to Quibus and to Sipe. I thought Jeff did great, even though he panicked a little at Tribal. He's fine. I love Mike, but my point would go to Nicole. 1 point to Nicole, who I thought was a total mess this week, but ended up getting back in the good graces of Nathan's best friend for life, even though she stabbed him in the back. I couldn't believe that by the end of the episode, she seemed to be right back in. So good for her. And I'm giving a point to Steffi.
Nice.
Who, even though you hated her decision so much, controlled a lot of power this week. She earned it, and I think she made decisions that put her in just fine shape next week. And I'm giving 2 points to Jacques because I actually really did like his move at the end because he got permission to stay in good with both sides. So he is in a real power spot, I think, right now, even though, like you guys say, he's weathered the storm and doesn't seem to be, you know, the snake in the grass or a big target anymore. I think he set himself up really well and got to use his power, and which is something he can brag about at the very end. And again, didn't upset anybody by doing it. So I'll give him 2 points.
Such a diverse week for 7 players out of 13 to get votes. And I think Sipe wins with 3 points. It was such a plurality vote in the Chizzy this week. I think it just speaks to the fact that there were so many people doing so many things, and it was hard to give out points. But I kind of do see the Nicole point. And wasn't enough to be an honorable mention for me. But once I stopped laughing at the drama of it all, you have to be like, wow, Nicole and Sipe, I mean, Rob and Sipe, actually don't feel so terrible about it when they really should. And there's something impressive in that. I maybe wasn't in the methods, but you can't argue with the result.
I think
exactly. The journey was a mess.
Yeah. Well, no, I think she sunk her game entirely last time. So it's like she improved on the game that she essentially like broke her leg last time and then was able to cross the finish line this time, you know, like, yeah, you finished the race. You could have done it in a better time, but you did finish the race. So I do agree. And I think that especially the move of her to give Sipe half the idol, I think is a really smart move that simultaneously earns trust while also sort of making a threat of, hey, you have this power, but if you vote me out, you're going to lose that power.
Yeah. Well, moving to Doof of the Week, because now we have to give out the worst player of the week. Yeah, I still don't agree with this Steffi pick, Rick. I have to give that to Steffi because as we're putting into the universe now, she chose to nap over going to Tribal Council, even though she had immunity at the merge vote. I just can't. But Dante again was lucky to miss out 2 weeks in a row being Doof of the Week because it was just so funny to me that he was like, we got 6. And he was like counting there on his fingers and it just was not the correct math. And look, I would be the one paying for bad math mistakes on Survivor. I know that to be true. But sitting from my couch, I can laugh at Dante for doing it. So, but Steffi still is my Doof of the Week.
I'll throw one behind Dante. He did not escape my clutches. And I totally get your point, Rick, how I could definitely see that while some people might assume Dante's next on the chopping block, it's actually that assumption that might actually protect him moving forward. But when it comes to this episode, between, you know, blowing up on a prospective jury member that does have other connections and is in the majority at the time, being blindsided yet again when he loses his closest ally, you know, bringing together this plan that relies on getting the minority of votes. Not a great week for Aquaman, though I would give an honorable mention to, like, I know Doof of the Week we've used to represent, you know, bad playing, but when it comes to actually acting doofy, it's got to go to, like, the man who I named this award after almost, Dural, because all the stuff he was doing behind the scenes this week was just pure comedy, pure Dural. That's why this man is winning the game, and I cannot wait to see it 9 weeks down the line.
Rick, well, who's your Doof of the Week?
It hurts me, Mike, that you would throw a vote at my boy Dante, who I have declared myself Team Dante. I'm a huge fan of the man. In fact, on Twitter, he called me his sidekick, which I thought was interesting, but I'm in for it. I'm in for it. I will be the seahorse to his Aquaman.
You're a Fonte.
That being said, even I have to give it to Dante.
Oh, no,
because
Rick.
Because I just can't get over this 6-vote thing. Like, it makes no sense to me that he was like, guys, with Jacques' extra vote, we're only down by 1 vote. Everyone put your hands in. Let's go, team. Let's get this done.
Yeah, like even the incorrect vote. Like, so he thought an extra vote without Steffi still made it 12. I mean, just carry the one. But anyway, yeah. He thought even in his mind, 6 people with Jacques' extra vote in a 12, like it's still not a great situation. Anyway, no. He was like, oh, I guess we're good to go. With people, obviously, that you've had bad relationships with in the past, you're relying on Jacques to vote with you twice. But as we all know, that wouldn't have even been enough. So the fact
and then
that
the Dante capper, could,
like every single person got what they wanted in this episode. Do you understand? Like yeah. Everyone voted how they wanted to, including Dante with all of his numbers. And it just wasn't enough. It's so funny.
And it's hard to make him the dupe of the week when, like you said, he got everything he wanted, except the final result. But the capper's got to be, you know, a tribal saying he over and over and over.
Oh,
it's
my
just
God.
As much as I love Dante and I am and I'm with him and I don't think he's gone next week. He's got to be my doof.
Well, Rick, hopefully by the time you go onto Twitter on like Tuesday at this point, you're not going to get like a disavowed notice from Dante with him being like him blowing up on you via social media. Hopefully you'll still remain.
If he blocks me out of the Justice League, if he blocks me out, I'm going to be so upset.
I know you have Rocco as Superman. Like, I think he's already passed you in that ranking.
Big time. Big time. I'm just getting his, I'm ironing his cape.
Does Aquaman have a cape? I don't know. We talked about Rocko's Aquaman. Cape. It's the one movie I didn't see.
Nope, you're right. No cape for Aquaman.
I want to talk about something else that we love, and that is Sears, which for some reason we have not spoken about until this late in the podcast, which is crazy. But this is part of the Biostrath Variety Hour, so please take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and the U.S. Army Blues.
And now it's the Biostrath Variety Hour with your host, Shannon. And also Mike Bloom.
Right. So in the Biostrath Variety Hour, we're going to mostly be talking about Steers.
I was going to say, the reason why this hasn't been mentioned until now is because it's not Biostrath. It is not. You have definitive power rankings. Also, Rick, hopefully your lovely wife, Becca Demons, prolific Wandolfer, is listening to this so she can be inspired by all the great theme songs that Jacob Sager Weinstein and his various collaborations have produced for this podcast.
She is constantly inspired by the wand offers. My son Jack just walked in and is looking at me. Jack, do you have anything you want to say to the people of South Africa? All right, go ahead, real quick. No, say
What's
something.
What's happening?
There we go. All right, go find your mom. Okay?
I think that's
right. What's happening, South Africa? Sorry about that.
No, I think that's extremely appropriate given the chaos that Survivor South Africa provides. Survivor South Africa, what's happening is going to be the theme of next season since LaRue's
there,
right now.
There you go. Again, LaRue, you hear that?
Well, see, so back to Steers. Got off track. We're talking about Biostrath, but it's not about Biostrath this week. Even though my mom is currently in South Africa, and I texted her saying, Mom, you need to find a way to get liquid Biostrath back into the country, even with our really, really hard airport laws, because I have to do a live tasting on the podcast. This is the kind of daughter that I am. These are the kind of demands that I make on my mother. But this week, it was all about Steers. There was a lot. There was some slow-mo licking that I didn't like. This was my favorite thing, actually, when Rob is asking about the Nathan vote and his face is like covered in sauce and he's crying. And I have dubbed this moment hashtag Steers Tears. You know, it's beautiful. It's tasty. Hashtag Steers Tears. I think it does speak for itself.
Can we talk about the way that some of these people eat burgers? Because I don't know if this is a South Africa thing or not. But so Sipe did this. I think Dante did this at one point. They take the top bun off the burger and eat it like it's an open face sandwich. Swear to God, I have never seen anybody do that in my life.
Well, I'm with you, Mike, and that stood out to me. But what also stood out to me was that those buns seemed comically large. And like, don't get me wrong, because I would literally give anything to try Steers. I'm obsessed with Steers. We don't even have to get into it. I want it so badly. But that the bread to burger ratio was way off. For my American values.
That's interesting. I mean, I'm not a great burger person being a vegetarian. Apparently the Steers sauce is like crazy delicious. Like there's something going on there. They flew in a waitress. Did they fly in a waitress from South Africa just for this?
No, Nicole said she was sent from heaven.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, well, that's a little bit closer than South Africa, at least. So.
And I do love Dural being Dural, the first person in line. She'd be like, what do you want to order? He's like, I don't need to look at the menu. I know what I want. Do you need payment? Here's my fake community idol.
Mike, that does remind me. So we have a new game that you prepared for us in this podcast. We call it I Don't Need a Menu, but it's about Nicole's long, long menu, ironically, later in the episode.
Yes, so,
oh God.
As we're aware, Nicole pulled a Christian Hubicki, tried to filibuster during the immunity challenge in an attempt to get people to drop. Seems like she got a good amount down, and then she went for, what, like, 2 hours, so like 40% of the Hubiki length. But what I did was I came up with a list of foods. We're going to go back and forth here between Shannon and Rick. You're going to tell me whether or not this is an item that Nicole talked about during the immunity challenge, or an item in a dish of a winning challenge on this past season of Top Chef. So we really have to see how much of a gourmand Nicole is.
I know that she didn't talk about Reuben sandwiches.
Yeah.
Because that is like the one thing that the connection to Christian, you'd think she would have brought it up at some point.
No,
isn't it amazing that Christian was able to do it and stay charming?
Yeah. That's the Christian charm.
Yeah, there was no Meryl who like dropped off and was like, I just couldn't listen to Christian anymore. He also only started doing it when it was just him and Alec. So that definitely helped.
That's true.
He only had one captain.
Alec would have killed him.
All right. Well, let's start with you, Shannon. So again, it's either going to be an item that Nicole talked about during the challenge, or it's going to be a Top Chef item in a winning dish. So here we go.
Okay.
Caramelized fig and crispy bacon.
I think that she said that.
That is correct. Let's go to Rick. Beef fat roasted carrots.
That's Top Chef.
That is correct. Shannon.
Boom.
Pepper steak garage pie.
I think she said that.
That is correct. And I actually didn't know what garage pie was until so this is like a South African pie, and it looks freaking fantastic. So I might have to indulge in some of that later on. I never heard about it up to this point.
South African food is crazy good. Like, if you thought you were craving food when you were on the island, Rick, once you try South African food, I feel like that must be another level of craving.
I'll bet. I'm not going to even try it, so that if I go back again, I'm not torturing myself.
Yeah.
All right, Rick. Smashed avocado with crumbled feta, black pepper, and lemon juice.
That, it's got to be Top Chef, too.
I'm sorry, that's something Nicole said.
What?
Yeah, she got...
What?
You don't need a menu.
She got real descriptive. All right.
It must not have stood out because I know what those things are.
Yeah, exactly. We got out of the garage pie and we went firmly into the house. All right, Shannon, back to you. Halibut ceviche.
Top Chef.
That is correct. Rick, fried chicken with corn and blackberry salad.
Nicole.
That is Top Chef.
Oh my gosh, I thought I was gonna do so good at this.
All right, Shannon, back to you. Back to you, Shannon. Oxtail stew.
Top Chef?
I'm sorry, Nicole said that. Rick actually mentioned it beforehand.
I did. That was in my notes.
Well, yeah, I can't believe that didn't stand out to me more. Maybe I was just trying to tune out Nicole like everyone else was, because I should have jumped at oxtail stew, because I just said South African food is amazing. I might take it back. Whatever that is sounds terrible. No, it makes you like monkey glands. It's actually not to do with
oxes. Oxtail is actually a pretty common ingredient. It's like super tender, so it would make sense. All right, Rick, that's back horrible. To you. Olive oil poached sea bass.
Top Chef.
That is correct.
Yes.
All right. Shannon, mussels on a bed of tagliatini drizzled in a white wine sauce.
Nicole said that.
Nicole did indeed say that. And that
I remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah, that might have been my favorite. I'm a big fan of mussels. So that's what got me. I would have covered myself in ink just to get some of that.
I just remember thinking mussels are like one of the few things you can probably go out and find.
Yes. That's true,
but not with a white wine sauce.
Like I was not craving seafood.
All right, Rick, back to you here. Peach cobbler.
Oh, that would have stood out. I'm in Georgia. I'm gonna say Top Chef.
That is correct. Okay, this is actually great. We are tied up 3-3.
Oh my god,
we're gonna go to a tiebreaker here, which is actually part of another game I prepared. I have brought back a favorite, the slow-mo showdown. So Survivor South Africa loves to use gratuitous slow motion, mostly during challenges. This time we didn't have a reward challenge. We had the Steers merch feast. Didn't seem like it was any different to the editors. We still had a lot of slow-mo shots as people devoured these bready burgers. So what I'm going to do is you're each going to write down a number. of how many times from when the new tribe walked in to the waterfall to when they left, did they have a shot of someone or something in slow motion? It'll be Price is Right rules, so closest without going over. So you're each going to write down a number. How many slow-mo shots were used in that reward feast, and we'll see who ends up winning this whole thing.
I don't feel confident about this, because it could be 100.
Yeah, as I write my number, I just wanted to give a special shout-out to the shot of Dante coming up out of the water while Letitia holds his milkshake.
I have said 7.
Okay, Rick?
13.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
Exactly.
Shannon, you are right on the money. It was 7 total. My. There was.
I know the sponsor so well, Mike. This is my superpower. It's not octopi power, but it's close.
There was an establishing shot of a burger. There was shots of Kubis, Jacques, Meryl, Rob, and Nicole twice devouring those big old burgers. So Steers really stretched the airtime on getting their
Steers
delicious
said,
menu.
We want. They said, we want former Miss South Africa twice eating our burgers.
Yeah. And speaking of, there weren't a lot on Twitter with the sponsors this week, but here's the worst tweet of the week from Steers, who, by the way, pretty much just tweeted about the feast. Like, at least pretend you're interested in the episode as well, Steers. But they tweeted a picture of Meryl licking the burger, and they said, don't worry, we bought her dinner first, wink face.
Oh!
I don't like any of that. What are they intimating there? Hated that, Steers. Hated that.
I'm just upset with the idea of buying her dinner before giving her dinner. I'm not even getting into the other stuff.
Yeah, it makes no sense as the first thing. And it's incredibly inappropriate is the second thing. Like, don't specialize, Steers.
To be fair, Meryl did get screwed in the vote, so I think that makes sense now.
No, they didn't watch the rest of the episode, Mike. I'm telling you, they're just talking about the merch piece.
Listen, I am still holding out hope for a box of Steers arriving in Georgia. So I just want to disagree with anything negative we've ever said about Steers. It's a terrific South African company that's making the world a better place.
I do want to speak. I forget. Did we talk about the ridiculously thick milkshakes when Steers made an appearance last season, Shannon? Because I just think that is a menu item name is pretty fantastic.
I remember they were milkshakes, but were they the ridiculously thick milkshakes? I don't remember.
Well, I think it was a thing where, like, they had some, like, salacious tweets about it. I remember us talking about this with
yeah.
Bob. Like, so I just love the fact that they're, I mean, ridiculously thick just has so many connotations nowadays that you'd think they'd stray away from that branding, or maybe they just bought into it and hoping that people would just sort of take the misconception and end up buying the product anyway.
The Steers marketing team needs, like, a cold shower. Like, what is this marketing material? Just really not enjoying it. But I know we love Steers, right? We're trying to get free Steers. I'm not sure they can send burgers internationally. They would probably be pretty gross
all right,
by the time.
Here's what happens, Steers. Please beam down your resident demigoddess into America to make Steers.
All right. Well, I want to get to some questions that we did not get to during this talk about the episode. A lot of international questions for you, Rick. Would Rick ever consider playing an international season a la Russell Hands? Hopefully they won't burn your hat. Hopefully it'll go a little bit better for you, but is that something you would do?
I didn't have a hat on my season to burn, so take that, Australia.
What could they burn, of course? What's the iconic thing we're burning?
Yeah, I had so much fun playing Survivor that I think I'd play it anywhere I could. I certainly wouldn't want to be voted out right away just because I came from the U.S., so I'd have to do some more research. I got to watch some more international seasons before I get into this.
Rick, are you aware how much money they win for Survivor South Africa? Because it's like a lot less than you got from Sia. So,
but a lot more.
Never mind then.
But a lot more Steers, so it's a good balance.
Yes. Go on just for the Steers. That's how you could actually get Steers, if you go on the show and last long enough to get to the merge or a Steers reward.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah, I'm honestly, I'll sign on just for the Steers and the Probiflora.
Yeah, but Nicole's going to be furious. He's not here for the game. He's not here for humanity. He's here for Steers.
Mike, you know I'm here for humanity, then Steers. You know that about me.
I love that Nicole as well said that relationships are more important than the game to her. Like, just after voting out Nathan, the self-awareness. Nicole. Oh, okay. Mark Percy asked, what aspects of Survivor South Africa does Rick think U.S. Survivor should implement?
I don't know that there's anything that stands out to me as like especially different. Like this, other than the amazing accents, I feel like this could easily be a season of Survivor. So I don't know what I would take away.
I think that Survivor South Africa may play like a little bit more, you know, fast and loose with kind of the things that the fans have wanted to see. As you talk about LaRue, you know, he's a super fan, and things that people have been speaking about on Reddit for ages, whether it's idols at a tribal council, not to spoil too much of season six, but like things that I've always really liked, like a 21 person cast, which is a small thing, but I think 3 Tribes of 7 was really fun. That's something US Survivor could take. I honestly think they should be hiring LaRue. I mean, I don't want LaRue to leave, but I think they would do well with LaRue on the team.
Anything that gives LaRue more power, I think it's a great decision because I love the guy. But no, I mean, I just, as a Survivor fan, again, this is the only season I've watched is Island of Idols, but I've loved every bit of it. And I've been surprised at how much it is the Survivor game, which is what I love. I think it makes me want to make Survivor more international, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're welcoming Canadians in now, which is awesome. But seeing these different personalities that are South Africans, it's like I would have loved to get to know some of these guys on the island, and for the TV show to explore those cultural differences. I love that they have more time per episode. And I know, I'm sure that that's something that Jeff and Matt Van Wagenen, those guys would love to have more time.
Mm-hmm.
But that part of it's outstanding. Yeah, I'm just really enjoying it.
No, I mean,
as a Survivor fan in general.
That's a great note about, you know, I think Survivor has really been branded a social experiment, especially as of late. And I do think maybe mixing in people of different cultures would be something very interesting. We even see something like that with like Abby Maria, who says, you know, maybe one of the reasons why I was not received so well by my fellow castaways is because just of the nationality that I come from and the way we behave there. And it's been so interesting. And I'm sure you'll experience this, Rick, the more you explore international Survivor, how, you know, the values that they take in gameplay sort of bleed out or bleed in from, you know, the values that their society sort of professes. And so it would be really interesting to see how American players would mix with Australians and New Zealand and South Africans, you know, particularly the English speaking Survivor seasons, just because they're all so different, yet they're all unified under this love for the game.
Yeah, your guest last week was talking about how she thinks South Africans are just naturally more emotional. So I think I might fit in just perfectly on a South African. I'll be laying in the hammock as Dante's sidekick going, Nicole, I thought we were talking about this tomorrow.
Yeah.
Take off that hat.
I really want to see that. I feel like that would reward a lot of my viewing over the last few years. And that's a season I definitely want to see. But, you know, Rick, you talk about, you know, you're watching it now. You're going to go back and watch the old seasons. Anyone can DM me for those seasons. Obviously, such good content out there. But that is all that we have to talk about today. What is the hashtag? Because I love Steer's Tears. I got to say, pre-podcast, that was what I was coming in with. I also like Octopi Power, if that's something we want to go with.
No, let's go with Steer's Tears. Listen, this is going to be the biggest highlight of the season for the brand. And if we do indeed want to be in their pocket of Big Burger, as Rick is alluding to, I think that it's only appropriate that we go through this.
I could not sell out to Steer's quickly enough.
What if, like, they do just win 1 million Rand worth of Steer's? I also thought in this episode, Nico was like 1 million Rand in cash. And I was like, what? Like, still too much money for you to giving it to them in cash.
Yeah.
You talk about the like, giant check, but they'll just be just like heaping cash on them. That's something I want to see.
You remember the early seasons of American Survivor where they just had that chest full of cash?
Yeah, that's what they should be doing, both brands.
Yeah, I can't imagine, like, do I really just have to take this home?
Yep.
Like, on the plane? Or
that'll be a spoiler, getting off the plane just with just giant treasure chest of money.
Yeah, right.
And, but then they'd have to provide like several fake chests filled with dummy gold to make sure like so people aren't on to us, so we have like four different people hauling chests out of the airport.
Yeah, and it's just fake rands, which none of us would know because I don't remember what rands look like, so even if you zoom in. All right, well, for me, just a quick shout out. You know, every week we come on the podcast and Mike talks about how much he has going on in his life. And I'm like, well, I'm just here living for Survivor South Africa. But I am getting another thing to my life, which is Australian Survivor, which is starting up on July 24th. So there's a premiere July 24th, which is Wednesday here in Australia. I'm going to be talking about that season all season long. Super excited about that. And I will be doing a preview podcast this week about everything we know so far with Liana Boris. So look out for that. And Mike, what do you have going on at the moment?
So I have been living in the upside down for the past couple weeks. Myself and the great Josh Wegler have been going episode by episode through Stranger Things season 3. We are rounding the corner at this point. Episode 6, 7, and 8 should be out on Monday, Wednesday, Friday on post-show recaps. Those have been a lot of fun. They're spoiler-free. What Josh and I did was we watched an episode, then recorded our immediate thoughts. So we have literally no idea what's about to happen, as shown by our very, very incorrect thoughts and predictions over the course of the of those podcasts. But they were a lot of fun, so be sure to check that out. And we're also doing a feedback show the next week, in addition to something else that might have some relations to Survivor, perhaps. And I cannot wait to get into that with Josh.
That's awesome. And you can also follow me at Shannon Gates, follow Mike at A Mike Bloom Type, where you can see our thoughts on all of these things. I'm going to be posting the chili chart. It's really ramping up. But Rick, where can people find you and what you're doing?
I am at Rick Devins, WGXA. I love Josh Wiggler. I'm also at Rick _ Devins, I think, on Instagram and all that stuff. And I'm thank you guys for having me on the show. This was so cool. I'm loving South Africa Survivor so much, and it's really making me a big fan of South Africa in general. So I'm just really excited for these players. I think they're all leaving it out there. I think that they're all terrific. And I was really excited to get to shine a light on them a little bit and talk about how hard and well they're playing.
Yeah, I mean, the pleasure
we
was
love
all
having
ours.
You on.
And it's so interesting as well, because I know that, you know, some players right after their season gets aired, they sort of have a mixed reception behind the show itself, even if it's an international edition. I know your cast is no different, but I mean, it was just an absolute delight for you to bring your sense of positivity and enthusiasm to this. I'm so excited to hear that you've been enjoying it as well, it being your first dip in the pool of international Survivor, and hopefully you can splash around it a bit while Letitia holds your milkshake.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. And these guys should know, again, I'm comparing them to no other season of International Survivor ever, but they have set the bar high. And because of this season, and of course, my boy LaRue, I'm going to be watching a lot more internet. Like, I'm so excited. This is easily my second favorite reality show now to regular Survivor.
Awesome. So, high bar. For me, I think it might be
tough. I am signing off on everything else and signing on international editions of Survivor.
Well, not to spoil too much about season 6, but next week we have PK on the podcast. We're trying again after the unfortunate technical difficulties we had last time. So that's hopefully a name that you'll come to know when you watch the season, Rick, but super excited to have PK on. But we really were so happy to have you here for your first ever Survivor recap, and that we got to be the team that was doing that. And yeah, it was great to talk to you. Thank you for coming on.
You guys are awesome. Thanks so much for having me. I can't wait to listen to what you have to say about the rest of the season.
We'll try not to spoil too much of the other seasons for you as we do that.
It's a minefield, but I'm navigating it.
We're going to have like a Rick-free, like a section specifically for Rick to listen to. That will be spoiler-free.
Yeah, that's if you could like just do another 2 hours each week, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll just do a Rick-specific podcast where we make sure there are no spoilers. My mom was like, My mom was weeks behind on The Amazing Race, and we were like, we spoiled it like a couple of times. So I had to like go through, find the time code to be like, skip over this bit. Like, it's too hard with all of these reality shows. But Rick, I hope we haven't spoiled anything for you. I hope you'll go back and watch. I'm so glad you're on the International Survivor train, and I'm so glad that you joined us here to talk about it. So thank you. Thank you, Mike, as always. Thanks to Scott Sabier behind the scenes. Thanks to you all for listening, and we will see you with PK, hopefully, next week. Bye.